Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, November 2nd, 2017. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. How are you, Andrew?
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm doing pretty good.
Awesome. It is great to have you here. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm stellar. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And I'm really glad to have both of you here, not just because you're just so much fun to talk with, but because you two are really sharp, and I have a feeling that you are going to have some interesting insights on Face ID. Here's the deal. So when Apple collects all the Face ID stuff, you know, the three-dimensional facial scanning that they're doing for the iPhone X, so this is what's replacing Touch ID.
Right.
They're getting all this data. Third-party developers can have access to part of that data. So like if you're making an app that's going to do a facial tracking thing in real time, or maybe it's going to overlay some image on your face for you in real time.
Like Snapchat.
Yes, there we go, like Snapchat. These are apps that will need access to some of that scanned facial data that Face ID is gathering. So there are concerns from security people that this is information that Apple can't really protect, and they have privacy concerns.
All right, so I want to offer what I believe is a correction to what you said.
Awesome. Okay.
So Face ID uses sensors on the phone, new sensors on the iPhone X, to collect this map of your face. And it, you know, it projects these, 30,000 dots. It builds a map. Then presumably it takes that map data, hashes it somehow, and stores it in the secure enclave, and then compares to that the next time you go to authenticate.
Right. So just to make sure I've got that right, when Apple scans all that data, for that part, they're not storing an image of your face. What they're storing is like a number that is generated. They have some other piece of data.
It's a result of a calculation. It's a checksum or a hash. And the hashes are one-way calculations. So and this is the same way your password currently works. And also, by the way, the same way your fingerprint works with Touch ID, is that it collects this data and then runs it through a calculation that spits out a number. Right. And the same, it's much easier to think of this with your password. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you type in your password, that password is put through a calculation and it spits out something else. And then that something else is stored. You cannot go backwards from that something else and get your password. But what you can do is the next time someone types a password, we can run it through the same calculation and see if it matches what we have stored. So that even if somebody gets that hash, is what we call it, mm-hmm. they can't go backwards and find out what your password is. Essentially, as I understand it, the same thing happens with Touch ID and the same thing happens with Face ID. Regardless, okay. though, that data is stored in the secure enclave. And as far as I understand it, with regards to this particular topic today, app vendors cannot get at the data in the secure enclave tomorrow, just like they can't get there today or yesterday. What app vendors can do is get access to the sensors, the very same sensors that are used for Face ID. So I don't think they get access to what Apple has stored. They just have the ability to capture the same type of data. So yes, they can get, if they ask, the users have to give permission for this, right? Just like we have for the camera and everything else. And when app developers, essentially when you build an app, you have to sort of apply for all of the things that you will need access to, even though the customer is going to give you access. Like, you have to have a reason to even ask the customer for access to, say, the camera or your contacts database or anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. There has to be a stated reason in the app to do that, to get this. And then you you can go ahead and ask the customer. So for this, they would have to have a reason. Of course, Snapchat's a great example. You definitely want them to have a reason to access the camera and the Face ID sensors. And I don't know if it's asked if like the camera permission then gives you the same access to Face ID. I don't know if Apple's forcing people to be prompted twice. But you'd want Snapchat to have that access, presumably so that they can do the cool facial mapping stuff with the actual sensors instead of trying to approximate it with the camera like they do now.
Seems totally reasonable. Okay. Yep.
So with access to those same sensors that are used for Face ID, apps could build a profile of your face, and in fact, probably will build a profile of your face for use in things like this. This is very different, though, from Touch ID, where apps never, ever got access to use that sensor for themselves. And that's the difference. Okay.
So the concern that a lot of people have, that developers can get at your biometric data in the secure enclave, that is a concern that they shouldn't have, because that's not going to happen.
Right. That's the point. Right. Otherwise, it's not a secure enclave.
No, it would not be. So what they could be concerned about, and in some cases just don't realize this is where they should be focusing their concerns, will some developers abuse their ability to get their own facial scan?
Correct.
And that seems like a reasonable question. You know, that of course developers have to agree to Apple's terms and to be part of the developer program. That doesn't mean they always abide by those terms.
Right.
Right.
So really what we're looking at is a scenario where it's possible at some point someone could abuse the access to those sensors, just in the same way someone could abuse access to the microphone or your contacts or anything else that they can access on your phone.
That's right.
All right. So do you guys think there's a legitimate reason for people to have that concern right now?
Yes. Okay. I mean, I think a weird thing that I'm reading from this Reuters article is that apparently Apple will let developers store a little bit of facial data on their own servers. And I think that could be a security issue.
Okay. Yep. I could see where that could raise some concerns. How about you, Dave?
Oh, totally. No, that's the issue, is they're allowed to not only capture this data, but then store it elsewhere. When they get that provisioning to use that, they have to promise that they don't share that data or sell it or anything like that, you know, that doesn't mean that they have to promise that no one will ever try to hack into their data. Right. I mean, it once the data is somewhere else, it is there. But here's the thing, I'm a privacy to me is, you know, our own personal place for privacy is chosen on this continuum between ultimate privacy and ultimate convenience, mm-hmm. right? If I was that worried about people having a scan of my face, I would, you would all think of me like you do Sia, right? You don't know what her face looks like because she's never shown it in public associated with her name, right? So I would have to walk around with a mask on my face all the time such that people wouldn't be able to take a scan of my face. My face is out there all the time. Not only am I on the internet occasionally, but I'm always out in public mm-hmm. without a mask, as far as you know. Maybe I am concerned about this. Maybe I've been wearing a mask for years. So even more so than a fingerprint, and I think most of us probably don't stop to think about all the things that we touch that we are leaving our fingerprints on, although I'm sure there's some that do, but most of us don't. So again, for someone to be able to get that data, it's trivial for the most part. But having the ability to capture it in your phone without any indication that it's being captured, because there's no light on the phone that lights up, right? It's not like your Mac where the camera light lights up, you know, but even still, like if you're willing to go to the grocery store, guess what? You're already on camera. Now, is somebody doing a map of your face? Probably not, but I don't know.
Yep. Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you really think that you're not being photographed and videoed when you're out in public, well, I'm sorry to be the person that has to break this to you.
Yeah. And I know there's people and I appreciate you folks, but the people out there that are, you know, banging the steering wheels on their cars, they're driving right now saying, you guys are part of the problem. You're not fighting against this. Like, yeah. Well, I mean, to me, that ship has already sailed. That said, mm-hmm. I do very much value the privacy of the data that's on my phone. And I very much like that it is encrypted in such a way that, you know, Apple can't decrypt it. Like, I'm still with you on that one. But on this one, I feel like the ship has sailed.
I'm with you. This is one of those metaphorical genies that is not going back in the bottle.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well said.
All right. So tomorrow, Dave, you and I will both have iPhone X in hand.
According to UPS.
And according to FedEx.
There you go.
So I'm curious how you... or how your Face ID experience goes. So maybe next week, after you and I have had a few days to play with our iPhones and try this out, you'll be able to come back on and we can share our experiences.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. I would love that. Okay. Well, Dave, you discovered something really cool that you talked about on Mac Geek Gab just recently.
Yeah.
It's about live photos. So... fill me in.
Yeah. So I have always been someone that for the most part hates it when I realize that I've just taken a few pictures and they're all live photos. It's like, no, I wanted that turned off. And there's a setting you can tell on the phone not to remember your live photos from session to session, and it should default to it being off. And it usually does, but it doesn't always. And then I get frustrated and it's like, oh crap, I've got these pictures in there that are live photos that I don't want as live photos. I find it annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down, I actually went and spoke in Houston for their Apple user group. And as happens at many Apple user groups before sort of the featured presentation of the month, whatever that is, they have their special interest group, which generally is a Q&A group. So there's someone that has some technical proficiency sort of leads that discussion, and people just bring their questions, right?
That's one of the things I love about user groups.
Same. So they were talking through this, and Jonathan, the guy down in Houston, who was leading the discussion, and I always like to join these discussions because I always learn stuff like this. He started talking about live photos, and he just had such a different perspective on it that it took me a little bit to wrap my head around what he was saying. And what he was saying is, if you treat live photos as sort of a permanent burst mode, then what you can do is, because he just kept referring, like, well, if I take a picture and, you know, something's not right, I just go back in, I pick a different keyframe and I'm good to go. I'm like, wait, what? Say that again? You know, stop for a second. And he does. He takes everything as a live photo. He's like, oh, I always thought this was how it was meant to be used. And maybe he's right. You take a live photo or you take a photo. What live photo does is it gets lots of frames before when you snap the shutter and lots of frames after when you snap the shutter. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's eyes were closed or if something's a little bit off, you can go into that live photo and scrub around and find the frame that's perfect for you and then make that your keyframe. And when you make that your keyframe, first of all, that's the one that shows up in your thumbnail view when you're scrolling around. But it's also the one that happens when you share it or post it live or post it not as a live photo, you know, posting it to Facebook.
Like a traditional static image.
Yeah. And of course, right. Yeah. So you're having the same sort of like mind shift that I started having. And then, you know, with iOS 11 and the new high efficiency image format, that's a container, as we've discussed on this show, mm-hmm. where you get to it basically bakes in all of this stuff into that one image container, and it's very efficient, as the name implies, not only about dealing with still photos, but dealing with these live photos. It's really only saving the delta between each frame. So it's not saving, say, whatever it is, 30 frames or however many frames you get. Okay. It's just changes, which are, you know, minimal. So yes, it's taking up a little bit more storage, but not 30 times as much, and probably not even double. Although I haven't checked that. I could be entirely wrong on that. But even still, like, just the concept of thinking about live photos, not as I wish for this particular thing I'm doing right now to be a live photo, instead just taking everything as live photos and then using them as you wish after the fact. Like, imagine looking at your pictures and saying, oh, dang it, Timmy closed his eyes. Great. Even a day later or a month later, I can say, let me see if I've got one where he didn't close his eyes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So this, Andrew, this doesn't sound like it's new to you. It sounds like you've thought about this previously.
Yes. I knew about this before.
Good for you.
I'm glad someone did.
Yeah. I like that about live photos, is that you can go back months, even years later, and change a live photo effect, change the key photo to something else, et cetera. I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And okay, so if you do that, then you can also do the thing where you export just a frame out of a live photo. Am I remembering that correctly?
Correct.
So if you wanted, you could go in and set a keyframe, but then pick like one or two other shots out of that live photo burst that look the way you want, export those out as stills, and now you have those to edit in any way you want.
Any way you want. And you can do this in Photos on your Mac as well. And then, of course, with iCloud Photo Library, you know, it all just sort of happens magically, and mm-hmm. and it's wonderful. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I've been telling everybody that'll listen since I sort of was shown the light on this, so to speak, because, you know, really kind of changed the way I thought about all this stuff.
All right, Andrew, I'm totally putting you on the spot right now, so I apologize in advance.
Okay.
No, it's okay, because you're really smart, so I'm not worried at all. So you already knew about this live photo trick that just wowed Dave and me. Mm-hmm. And I know you spend a lot of time with photos or photography on your iPhone.
Yeah.
Do you have any other quick tips that you would want to share to help people have better photos from their iPhones?
Well, I did write a series of tips. I think it was last week, mm-hmm. Concerning live photos. I guess if we're talking about iOS 11, you know, just remember you can change the live photo effect. For example, live exposure, turn it into a loop. And then for basic photography tips, mm-hmm. Probably the most important thing to keep in mind is good lighting. If the light looks cool, then your photo is going to look cool. You can make sure you frame the picture, frame your subject, and see if you can create a cool composition, for example. So those are some of the basics.
All right. And now I have a question for you, because you mentioned the lighting. So with the, if you can't get the lighting just right, and I totally get how important lighting is for a good photo. If you do the thing where you tap on the screen, you know, where it does the focal point for exposure, and then yeah. slide up and down to change your exposure, have you had any luck with that improving the image quality when your lighting isn't as good as you would like?
Yeah, actually. So the best thing you can do to correct lighting is shoot raw. because that captures all of the information from the scene, and that lets you change the exposure in editing more easily than if you just shot in a JPEG.
Okay. All right, cool. Actually, I would love to sit here and keep talking about more photo tips, but we're kind of out of time, so we're going to have to stop. Andrew, thank you for bringing your photography wisdom to the show today. You rock.
Yeah, no problem.
And Dave, thank you for being here too with your fantastic knowledge about Face ID.
My pleasure. I hope I've got that right, and I think I do.
I believe you do, yes. And listeners, thank you so much for being here, and I'll remind you again, let me know which Animoji you want me to use for my iPhone X review. I'll be telling everyone tomorrow what was the most popular, and yes, that's exactly what I will use, no matter which Animoji you chose. So, I'm looking forward to what that's going to be. Anyhow, let me know. You can send me a tweet. That would be at Timo Daily. You can send me an email, observations@macobserver.com, and you can leave a comment in the show notes. I will be checking all of those places. Thanks for listening. See you again tomorrow.